Reichman University.
De-influenced. It's time to set the record straight with Jana Hoffman and Amanda Jakubowicz.
Welcome to De-Influenced, a show that explores the world behind the camera, the influencers who can affect our lives and the world in which they live. My name is Jonah Hoffman, and with me, as always, is Amanda Jakubowicz, and today we are joined by a very special guest. He's a writer and producer at The Daily Wire, Jacob Falach. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Jacob, very nice to have you on. And so just to preface this little interview, you know, we're here. Our podcast is really just having every different perspective of this October 7th world here, talking about this sphere, this world that has been created after the 7th. And, you know, as Jews, obviously politics has been something and very involved in this as well. It wouldn't be a true Shabbat dinner without a healthy dose of political debate. And so, Jacob, you're here with us today to get into some of that political aspect as well. So firstly, can you give us some of the lore? Like, what did you do? What do you do? Who are you? How'd you get into it? And also, does Ben Shapiro always talk that fast?
Well, you know, I'll answer the last question first. You know, I've worked with Ben for quite a bit of time. Started working for him in 2020 when I was 18 or 19. He does talk fast. He does talk fast, but I'll also say, you know, with those fast speaking words behind the camera, he's also one of the most genuine, kind people you ever meet in your life. So those fast words, they really, you know, you get used to it, and you love the guy even more than you do on camera when you get to know him personally. It's kind of a long story. So I got into politics when I was in high school. I feel like a lot of people in Gen Z, they got into politics because of the 2016 election, because it was just so polarized with Trump and Hillary. And I was going to school in LA, and I was in a city in LA, not a Jewish city at all. It was 99%. I don't even know why I'm not saying 100%, because it seemed like 100% of the city was of Hispanic descent. And all of my friends growing up were Mexican. And, you know, when 2016 rolled around and the media started hitting Trump saying that he was going to deport all the Mexicans, and he was going to do this and he was going to do that. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I fell for the bandwagon. I was walking around saying, yeah, I hate this guy. Like, oh my God, he's against my friends and stuff like that. And I got into left-wing politics, but then my dad overheard a conversation. I was at my Israeli right-wing dad overheard a conversation I was having one day with a friend of mine in my room, and he questioned me after. He's like, you don't like Trump? I was like, no. He's like, do you know how these people feel about Israel and where your family's from and everything like that? I was like, no, what are you talking about? So I looked up, he told me to look into Obama's policy decisions when I went to Israel, and I was 16. I didn't know what I was looking at, but I looked into it. And from there, I kind of went down a rabbit hole of looking into Trump and the legitimacy of the claims against him. And I became a devout conservative. And then, not to give too long of a story, but I became a conservative. It was known in my high school. And then 2020 rolls around. I think I had just graduated high school, but I was still very in tune with my city. I still live there in California. And I made a tweet the day that George Floyd died, because I was seeing a lot of racism against white people. Like people just saying like, oh, white women shouldn't reproduce, stuff like that. I was growing up, they were saying stuff like that. So I made a tweet against it, and I got canceled by like my entire city. Like everyone I went to high school with were responding to it. So instead of backing down from it, I doubled down, and I applied to the Daily Wire, and they hit me with an email back, I think 6 months later when I was in college, and I dropped out of my first semester of college and I started working for them, and that's where we've been ever since.
Crazy. That like left wing to right wing California pipeline. And now you don't even live in California, right?
No, now I don't live in California. I moved there right before the sixth grade, and I was there up until 1 year after I graduated high school. But then I started as an intern at the Daily Wire, and it was supposed to be just a 6 month deal. And then 2 months into it, Jeremy, the CEO, made an announcement saying we were moving to Nashville, and I was like, So I went up to my supervisor and I was like, hey, can I come with you? And he looked at me like I was crazy. He's like, what are you talking about? You're an intern. Like, well, what are you going to, you have friends here, you know, like go to a party or something, like what? And I told them, no, I want to come. So I guess they liked how bold I was, and they took me with them. So I've been in Nashville since 2020.
That's one thing I find about right-wing politics is, like, if you are hardworking and you're committed, they're like, yeah, come, like, be
Yeah.
chief of staff. Like, you can climb the ranks just with, like, that passion and commitment.
100%, 100%. People value two things above all, or I'd say three: loyalty, believing in the movement that you're contributing to, and work ethic. If you have those three, if you're working for respectable people, those people will respect you as well.
I'm from Seattle originally, so I can very much relate to, especially what happened during the George Floyd riots and stuff. We had Chaz and the autonomous zone and everything, and that was a crazy time. I did my driving practice there. Just to really dive into a lot of what we want to talk about today, right wing conservatism and general GOP and everything has become really, really big, especially post October 7 for the Jewish community. You're seeing a lot of Jews join the GOP and starting to vote Republican, even those who have been traditionally Democrat their entire lives. Is all support for more right-wing figures going to have an unintended consequence of isolating the Jewish community and bringing them further away from Israel and Jewish issues and becoming truly, and will we ever become like truly bipartisan again? Because again, at the moment, it seems like a very partisan issue. Like Israel seems like a very Republican thing. Do we have hope of becoming a bipartisan thing again?
No, it's a very interesting question as of a few days ago with the whole Trump Gaza situation. It's very interesting because I think this has the potential to change a lot of people's opinions. And if you honestly ask me right now, I don't know in which way it'll flip it, because it really just depends how this whole plan pans out. But you're right when you say that the Israel thing really is a partisan issue. I mean, you have in the government right now on both sides, you have really the establishment politicians that have been in their seats for, decades. They are staunch supporters of Israel, pretty on both sides. I mean, it's a pretty concrete thing, but you have this new generation of politicians coming in. And you ask if support for Israel is going to be a bipartisan thing. I trust God, and I hope that, what I'm saying is incorrect here. But as somebody who spends a lot of time on the internet, I'm seeing trends in both the left-wing spaces, as we've all seen with the protests, but also in the right-wing spaces of this new generation not really supporting Israel. From the left-wing space, it comes from a, anti-colonization, anti-saying that Israel is like a white nationalist state, even though that makes absolutely no sense if you have ever been to Israel for more than 5 minutes. That's what the left-wing space comes from. They essentially have a rule. The But to put it bluntly, the more brown you are, the more correct you are, and in there, or like the more morally just you are in any conflict. And they perceive Israelis as being predominantly white and Palestinians as being like a more brown people. But then on the right side, on the right wing side, you have this movement that's like picking up, and it's like a conspiratorial movement saying that, Israel is secretly behind every issue you have going on in the United States right now. They're behind at both sides of every conflict. And, they'll reference like the USS Liberty, and they'll reference, all this stuff about why Israel's not a good ally. They were freaking out. Oh my God, they were freaking out the other day of I don't know if you saw that clip of when Netanyahu was meeting with Trump. Trump pushed the chair in for him behind him. It was like a gesture of, kindness and respect. It's a foreign leader. Oh my God, the internet lost their mind saying, ah, see, Israel owns Trump. Trump is a lapdog. So if you ask me if I think bipartisan support for Israel is on the horizon, honestly, I hate to sound like a black pillar, but you're gonna have a new generation of politicians coming in who are gonna be completely ideologically different from the establishment politicians in the Senate right now. And I don't see an uptick in support on either side for Israel, either on the right wing or the left wing. There are more right wingers support Israel, don't get me wrong, more than the left. But this new generation of right wingers is significantly more skeptical, and then the left wing, obviously, you guys know about them.
It's really interesting that you say that, because like as we were preparing this interview, we kind of like built up the questions and we're like, oh, when we start talking about the right wing, he's going to say how great the right wing is to the Jews and how bad the left wing is, and we'll like dig into all of that. And so it's really interesting that you say like it's all bad. And really it is. Like, I think that a big misconception amongst Jews, especially after the seventh, especially Jews that feel so politically lost and they don't feel like they have a political home anymore, with like the tolerance for anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism from the left wing that Jews used to be so much a part of. And now there's this big conception in the pro-Israel community that right good, left bad. Like, oh, the Republicans are our friend, Trump is our friend, and the RNC is our friend. And I remember when there was the RNC and then the DNC after, and how in the RNC there was like the parents, all the Jews said, yay, look how good the RNC is. And then the DNC happened, and the same thing basically happened. Again, you had parents of hostages, you had the crowd saying, bring them home, you had people really emotionally connecting. But then there were all these right-wing Jews, or just Jews saying, oh yeah, but actually in the Democratic Party, blah, blah, blah. Like, there's problems everywhere, and I think that's a really big misconception. So how much would you say, in your opinion, Israel support really does differ at the moment across partisan lines?
Well, the first thing I'm going to say is, like, well, as politics stand right now, let me make myself perfectly clear. The Republican Party and Trump and everything like that is certainly, I mean, the president you have in the White House right now is the most pro-Israel president that the United States has ever had, you know. I mean, it's like the guy has a city in Israel named after him. You know, you got Trump Heights because of everything that he's done. Yeah, exactly. His daughter, Ivanka, she's a convert to Orthodox Judaism. You know, the guy is a friend of the Jews, and he is a friend of Israel. And the GOP, as politics stand right now, certainly is the safest place for Jewish people. I mean, you don't really have to look into, you know, Trump's history. You can just look back to the previous administration and how much they pushed back on Israel doing what they needed to get this war done. The Biden administration was the biggest headache for Netanyahu during the first half of the war. And then the second half of the war, I think Biden started stressing about the election and forgot the war was even happening. Probably fell asleep, but...
I think he forgot a lot of things. How to walk, how to...
His name, what time to go to the restroom, stuff like that.
Zelensky's name.
Zelensky's name, very true.
He was asleep. True. He was asleep for all of it. It was like weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah, exactly.
As he should. Like, if you're 80, like, when I'm 80, I don't want to run a country. The biggest country, the biggest superpower in the world, no. I want to eat ice cream. I want to be at the beach. Like, honestly, he had it right. I mean, minus, like, doing that as a president.
Yeah, but, you know, once you taste power, it's hard to, you know, like you say that now, but if I were to put you in the seat of the most powerful nation on the face of the planet, I mean, for me, you know, I have political aspiration. My dream in life is to be a senator. And, like, just the thought of having some type of power over the most powerful nation in the world, it's like, it's an intoxicating feeling to have, you know. And if you're in the seat of the most powerful position of that most powerful nation, it's like, I don't care if you're 90 years old, that's going to be hard to give up, you know. Biden, he didn't want to drop out of the race. They essentially forced him out. I mean, what happened as soon as he dropped out of the race? This guy puts a MAGA hat on and smiles at the camera. This guy, what did he say about conservatives that completely, he said we were like all garbage or something like that. It's like he immediately started sabotaging Kamala, and he didn't come on her campaign trail once, you know, like the guy did not want to give up power.
There was like a hot mic or like a lip reading moment with him and Obama, I think, and they were talking about how like Biden's like, it should have been me. I don't know, this is literally just us being like a little drama channel now and like 100%. Digging into all the drama. There's a lot that happened over this election cycle.
They forced the guy out, and he wasn't happy about it. But to go back to your original question about where do I think, you know, it stands right now about partisanship, I think, you know, specifically speaking about the people that are currently elected to Congress, you have the majority of people that are, you know, I would say the majority of you know, congressmen, and obviously the president would be, you know, enthusiastic to wear a hostage pin. You know, like I think they support Israel, and that you obviously have the radicals, and most of those radicals come from the Democratic Party. But the majority of Congress and the executive branch, they support Israel. My concern comes for the next generation of politicians. That's my issue. Because, you know, I'm part of Gen Z. I'm, you know, like, I see the trends of people. And on the left side of things, like, on Gen Zers that lean left, I'm support for Israel. You know, I think I saw like a statistic that said, like, I think it was like only 40% of Gen Z supports Israel. I don't even think that's true. I think it's like maybe 20% of Gen Z Americans.
I heard it was down to 17, according to last polling.
Wow, you see that? That's exactly what I'm saying. It's like insane, you know? And it's so that's on the left side, and then on the right side, I don't want to try to guesstimate where it's at, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was like at a 50% of Gen Z conservatives like are enthusiastically supporting Israel, because this conspiratorial, branch of conservatism that's like making its way into the mainstream is very pervasive and it's very prevalent. You have not to bring up this piece of garbage's name, but this Nick Fuentes guy gets a lot of traction. Kanye West. You'll have to fact check me on this, but I think I heard somewhere on Twitter he has more followers than there are Jews in the entire world.
Yeah.
Probably. It's not hard.
It's not hard to beat. You have other certain conservative political commentators who have a big grasp over the conservative movement that have, kind of gone off the rails going against Israel, people I don't want to name. So it's like, I wouldn't be surprised if we were like at 50%. Maybe even lower in Gen Z. So that's why I'm saying I'm worried about the next generation, because you already have one half that doesn't support us. We know that for a fact. Now the other side is getting low.
100%. And like, it's not, unfortunately, it's not a great future. And yeah, like, do you think at the moment it's a little bit of a facade going on and it's really just the right kind of being guilty of politically pandering to our community, to the Jews and the pro-Israel, the way that the left politically panders to the other side? And do you think this is leading to Republican Jews being sold on this idea, this facade that, oh, everything's okay because Republican good and Democrat bad?
Well, I think if
Like, do you
you're
think it's genuine?
to if I had to pinpoint where it's coming from, if it's a place of being genuine, I would cite, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but there was a 18th century philosopher, or not philosopher, but he was like a political commentator. He was from Europe, and he wrote that every single time with the rise of nationalism in a country, so comes the rise of anti-Semitism. That's been pretty much the tide of history. And I have no issue with American nationalism. I think if you're a member of a country, you should be a nationalist for that country. That is, being a nationalist is many things. And if you care about your country first and foremost, you should be one for your country. And with Donald Trump, conservatism, he has incited nationalism, populism in the conservative movement, and he's kind of rose that. And I think because of that, with nationalism, you come to try to find somebody to blame for your issues, and I think that rule that political commentarist from the 18th century, I think it's true what he said. I think because of the nationalism rising, I think people were looking for, someone to blame for all the issues in the United States, and it gets kind of boring blaming the other side of the political aisle when you want to be more conspiratorial and say, okay, but who's really behind it? Who's really behind it? So I think that's the reason, because we become more nationalist as a nation, and it's like it's a tug of war, because as a conservative, I love the thought of American nationalism, putting America first on the table. But as a Jew, I'm like, wait, can you guys do it without blaming my ethnicity of people? But I do think to an extent it's genuine. I don't think it's a grift. I think people genuinely don't like Jews. I think some people are grifting on it, but I do think, it's really easy to go down a rabbit hole when you kind of get that conspiratorial spike in your brain,
Yeah.
and I think that's what people are
It's
going
really
for.
hard. Like, also, sometimes I look at the world and I don't understand. I'm like, why is everyone so hateful? And like, I hate when it just comes down to the answer is hate. Like, it's just simple. There's nothing to do about it. Cause it's such a like easy answer to make. It's like, no, there has to be some sort of rationalization, and sometimes there just isn't.
Yeah, I agree with you.
That also it kind of leads me into my next point, which is we have so much group polarization and the usage of ethnic groups and religious groups by the larger both GOP and the DNC of these groups as sort of polarization. Do you think the Jewish community and the Jewish Israeli community is at risk of falling into becoming one of these groups for the GOP at the moment, the same way sort of the LGBTQ community and the minorities communities such as the Hispanic or the Black community have become sort of, I don't want to say tokens, but kind of tokens of the Democrat Party. Do you think we're at the same risk right now?
Ooh, that's a really good
point. Are we playing that identity politics game that we like to blame a lot of other groups for playing with the other side of the political aisle?
Man, that's a really good question. I don't think Jews will be used to the extent that, like, you know, in 2020, during the 2020 election, Black racism was used, or during the 2016 election, you know, Hispanic racism was used is like a punching at the Republicans. I don't think the Republicans are going to really use the Jews as much as a punching against the Democrats, because you still do have those, like, because when you use a group in politics to attack your political opponents, you have to specifically point out another politician to take out a shot at them, right? Like in 2016, Hillary was using, like I said, the Hispanics to take shots at Trump, saying, oh, he's going to deport all these innocent people. In 2020, Joe Biden was talking about Black racism and stuff like that. Trump, I mean, who is he? He might be able to point at a few senators, you know, Ilhan Omar, AOC, you know, stuff like that. But I don't think there's enough political gain to get from doing all that. I think he's going to be too preoccupied right now trying to get all this stuff done that he said he was going to do. But I mean, the Democrats can't use us. That's for sure, because they've abandoned us. So, I mean, if someone's going to use us, I guess they would, but I don't think it's going to be as prevalent as other races we've seen before. I don't think so.
Right. Do you,
because
do
you, you still have Democrats wearing hostage pins. I mean, you know, it's like,
yeah,
it's kind of,
I mean, you have people like John Fetterman out there who is basically turned into a conservative at this point.
When he first entered the political scene, man, I was with every other conservative. I was like, oh, why are you wearing that to Congress? Oh, you're not healthy enough to do that. I rail against that guy like nobody else. And I'm looking at him and I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty sure I still disagree with you on like 90% of your opinions, but
you're
kind of all right. You're not as bad as I thought you were.
He seems like the political definition of the I'm just a chill guy meme with the dog in the sweater and jeans. Like that's what he reminds me of.
The outfits is very much like billionaire off duty, Mark Zuckerberg, Bill Gates, like that type of vibe. Like he just wears what he wants. I love it.
Adam Sandler on the streets type of deal.
Adam Sandler.
Just to kind of switch it up to another topic a while, because I think we had really good discussion here about identity politics and everything, and you obviously you live in a place with a small Jewish community, a small you know, Jewish population, and does the Jewish identity really change when you're in a small Jewish community versus a big Jewish community, and how does that come across in the influencers and the people and the content creators and the public speakers and stuff we see coming out of these communities versus those who come out of in town or the big Jewish communities like New York and places?
So let me first preface and say you're right about it being a very small community here. You know, I keep kosher. I am Shomer, and I live across the street from my local Chabad center. And my community of religious Jews here, like every week we struggle for a minyan. You know, it's like we don't. You know, I've spent time in New York, I've spent time in New Jersey, and it's like these people, like, oh, like the thought of struggling for a minyan is laughable. You know, like you have a bunch of people showing up. So it is a very secluded place for Jews out here. It's not the easiest place to live if you, you know, follow the mitzvot, the commandments. But, you know, I think to an extent, like it's good being around other Jews, but being isolated and being the only person from your culture really in a large area, it kind of makes you cling to your identity more in a way. You know, like because there's really only two ways that you can do it. You can kind of assimilate in a way and not grasp your identity, or you could, you know, double down on it. And, you know, I decided to double down on it. And, you know, I've been to the pro-Palestine protests in pro-Hamas protests in Nashville. And, you know, I've spoken up about it. And people are like, what the hell is a religious Jew doing here in Nashville? You know, like, what's going on? But I think, you know, when the Second Temple was destroyed, you know, it says in the Torah that we would be scattered to the four corners of the earth, you know, and it said we would not be comfortable in where we stayed. And I think, you know, that's been part of our identity for the last 2000 something years. And it doesn't matter whether you're in New York or it doesn't matter whether you're in Tennessee. I think it's all of our responsibility to, you know, kind of cling to our Jewish identities and double down on them. And that's what I've tried to do. And, you know, I think I've seen a lot of people, I have a lot of friends in bigger Jewish communities in places like LA, who they're surrounded by Jews all day. So they're not as involved in public discussion because they don't really see those outside POVs besides on their cell phone screen, you know? But I definitely think that me being around a lot of non-Jewish people has kind of made me double down in a way.
For sure. And like, I think that's actually something with Israel, and like a lot of secularism that you see in Israel comes from the fact that like, oh, like, well, Shabbat, everything closes and there's no buses. Like, they already live within Jewish culture and they forget what it's like to actually make the effort to live in it yourself. And another thing is, I'm really of the opinion that the best hasbara is having a strong Jewish identity. Like, you're not going to convince the whole world to like stop hating Jews. If we haven't done it till now, we're probably not going to do it ever. Just having a strong Jewish identity, like being proud of being Jewish, doing the things that make you feel Jewish, make you feel connected to your community, that's really like the people around you that aren't Jewish, they're going to see that and they're going to respect that. Like, if you love yourself, at the end of the day, other people will love you. And if they hate you, then they're not important. And I think that's really the best hasbara, and that's how you connect with people, is having that strong Jewish identity. And so, final little thing that we're going to get into. So keep in mind, I'm a conservative and I'm not a Republican, because like Canada's a little different. Not as much of my thing. Like, if I were in America, I would be Republican. But really, like, I do align very much with conservatism. But I want to point out that there's a certain arrogance that I find, hopefully that's the right word, that comes from some of the right-wing Jews that think their partisanship represents their morality, and they'll look down upon Jews that aren't on their side of the political aisle. So I'm going to use an example, but like, really on this podcast, like, we're just talking about everything and like, we really do want to hear from everyone. But the example here is, there was like this post from Joan of Judea that I saw, and this is what she said: "I'd rather watch paint dry than wait for Democratic Jews to get on the right side of history. Your buddies Chuck Schumer, Bernie, and other lowlives are going after Israel again. They perfectly represent you. You're not immune to cowardice and brainwashing, arrogance, or baseline self-hate. Oh my gosh, they're just Democratic Jews. They didn't like kill your firstborn. It's going to be okay." And I feel like that's a really like common attitude that's coming up, and that's a big problem with group polarization. It's actually a psychological term as well. Like, Jonah brought up that term, but it is a term of, there's just this isolation and you get more and more extremist polarizing views as you're inside an echo chamber. And I think that's apparent in an example like this. So it's not like, oh, we're the good Jews because we're right wing and the bad Jews are left wing and stuff. Like, we're unity at the end of the day, strong Jewish identity is the thing that's going to get us out of this, in my opinion. And I think that attitude is really like unproductive and unnecessary. Have you kind of found that? And like, what do you think about that? Like, do you hold that same opinion? Or do you kind of see some merit within that?
So, you know, to be completely honest here, you know, the account Joan of Judea, I know the owner personally, she's a good friend of mine. I respect her and I respect her views, and I agree with most of the stuff she posts on this particular post and this particular topic. This is what I will say. When it comes to outreach to Jews, you know, if you would have come at it from my tactic, I grew up with Chabad, so I kind of take a Chabadnik route. I don't think any Jew is past saving and condemnation, and whatever Jew, you know, I will try to welcome with open arms and show them the light in the right way. I won't, you know, tell them I would rather watch paint dry than deal with you. As that post said, but, and this is where I'm going to be, you know, completely honest, and I'm not sure if you'll take issue with it. We are a people who, it was a famous quote, I can't remember who said it, but it's not that we keep the Torah keeps us, right? And when you have the majority of American Jews who are openly advocating for stuff like homosexual marriage, abortion on demand, transgender rights, whatever rights those may be, stuff like that, and they're open about it. And then you have groups run by Jews like that, like the ADL, who go onto a public platform and they type things like abortion is a Jewish value, telling the world that killing babies in the womb is something that is inherent with the Jewish faith. When you have stuff like that, I see the Jews, I see the Jews with the golden calf. I see Jews that, you know, the most heretical Jews that you could possibly imagine, heretical Jews of biblical proportions. You know, if you have an opinion like that, you know, nobody is perfect. Everybody is a sinner. No human is perfect. You know, that's what teshuvah is for. But there's a difference. There's a difference between being a sinner in your own personal views and knowing that and taking it up with God, and being enthusiastic about your sinful way of life and trying to push people into power who are going to push your sinful opinions onto society that go contrary to everything that the book that was given to your ancestors thousands of years ago talk about. So I think it's to sum everything it up, everything that I've set up, I think the majority political opinion of most Jews, this extreme liberalism of American Jews, is disgusting. And I think it's embarrassing for us. And I think that Hashem is, you know, I know he loves his people, but I think he's looking down in disgust at the opinions of a lot of Jews in the Western world. But I don't think that just because a Jew has had an opinion like this, I don't think any Jew is too far gone. I don't even think Bernie Sanders is too far gone. I think, you know, being humans and having rational souls from God, I think that no one is ever too far gone. And I don't think anyone should ever be shut out. But I will never be supportive of a Jew having an opinion like that. I will always push back against them. I will never sit idly by, you know, the same way as, like, you think about a parent whose child is doing something that, you know, won't be conducive to their flourishing. Does the parent, you know, because he loves them, does the parent stay quiet and let them try to do what they do? Or does the parent speak up and say, no, what you're doing is wrong and you need to fix yourself? And as somebody, I wouldn't say I'm a parent of another Jew, but I would say we're all family. I would definitely speak up and let them know that I feel what they're doing is disgusting, but also let them know that they have a home with me if they're willing to learn and they're open to changing their opinions.
I just want to say, I really appreciate the fact that you're here, you're saying your opinion, you're being blunt about it, and whoever's listening, and me and Jonah as well, can either agree or disagree with that. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that we can have this exchange. And, like, really, again, to sum it all up here, that's what our podcast here is about. Take whatever topic is relevant to the post-October 7th world and see where people lie. And we don't have to agree. And I think that makes us stronger as a Jewish community when we can put these options on the table. Look at Trump talking about Gaza. He put a brand new alternative on the table, and now people can say, I like it, it should go in this direction. I don't like it, it should go in that, et cetera, et cetera. But bringing this up is so important to our community. So really, just overall, thanks for being here. And we have like a minute left of the Zoom, so we're gonna wrap up.
Again, Jacob, a lot of stuff, what you said here is very valuable, and I appreciate a lot of what you said, especially just like your blunt honesty with a lot of it, because I think that's a lot of what's missing in politics nowadays. We do too much weaving and trying not to upset everybody. I really like the blunt honesty is great. With that said, thank you for listening to De-Influence, a show that sets the record straight, explores the world of influencers, content creators, and more. Thank you so much, Jacob, for joining us today. My name is Jonah. As always, is with me is Amanda, and we will see you in the next one.
De-Influence. It's time to set the record straight with Jonah Hoffman and Amanda Yakubovitz.